Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of our listeners. Today's hosts are me, Eric,
Amber,
and Tanya.
Me and Tanya are students of Willits High School, and Amber is a student of the college UC Santa Barbara. Today we have two topics, high-tech communication and why teenagers are still becoming tobacco addicts. We will spend around 30 minutes discussing each topic, including your calls, so please be ready to call when we give out the numbers. Many of you in the audience are part of a generation called the Baby Boomers, and many of you are part of Generation X. Many people in our generation are now being called Millennials. The world keeps changing, and we want to keep you informed. Buckminster Fuller, a hero of many baby boomers, said, "The medium is the message. We want to let you know what the medium is for our generation." So we will begin with the discussion of high-tech communication. 2 years ago, students from Laytonville High School did a Youth Speaks Out called Virtual Communication. The host discussed texting as a common form of sending messages back and forth among high school students. Surveys suggest that around 80% of high school students have cell phones with texting capabilities. Many people listening to the show aren't familiar with texting, so we'll explain what it is.
Texting refers to the exchange of brief written messages between mobile phones over cellular networks. Individual messages are referred to as text messages or texts. Texting is a cross between an email and a phone call. You can send a message up to 160 characters long, so it will scroll out on the receiver's cell phone screen. You can send a text to numerous people at the same time as well. Because of the limitation of the message length, people use abbreviations and acronyms. Many students send and receive upwards of 100 messages per day. The benefits of texting include that it is cheaper than a cell phone call, can be done anywhere, and it is less of a space invasion than a phone call. Text can be great in emergencies like fires or toxic spills, and many people attribute the apparent success of the Egyptian Revolution to the use of texting as a tool for organizing demonstrations. You can also get your message across without having to engage in dialogue. It is like email without a computer, and you can use it in class without the teacher noticing it.
A problem with texting is that the message is just a short string of words and acronyms. There is no voice for inflection or a sense of emotion. This can lead to numerous misunderstandings. There are cases of people being bullied or harassed through text messages, or cheating on their school tests by getting the answers from a friend's text. Driving and texting is illegal and obviously dangerous, but commonly done. Then there is the subject of sexting, sending revealing photographs around, often with the purpose of embarrassing someone. Other problems with texting include degrading of language skills, addiction like use of the cell phone, and the cost of first of the service. We are going to discuss our relationship with high-tech forms of communication for about 20 minutes, then we will open the phone lines for your comments and questions. Eric, how important is texting in your daily routines?
Well, for me, texting, it's something that I definitely do every day, but as far as being important to my daily routines, I could say I would definitely be able to live without it. The main use of it for me is generally planning out events or things like that. For actual conversations, like long drawn out conversations, you know, generally I'd actually make a phone call to that person. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, texting is pretty much just, you know, quick messages, you know, like say something to someone, you know, or just, you know, get a message across or say, can we meet here or whatever else that you're trying to, you know, get done.
Yeah, usually when I want to hail someone or hang out with them for the day, I'll just send them a text. Or
right.
If I actually feel like talking to them or carrying on a conversation, I'll call them at least.
Right.
I feel like texting for me is just more like the necessary. Like, I need something, so I will text you because I need something from you.
Yeah. Like, I like, too, how you can send text to more than one person at a time. So, like, but I don't know, generally when I do that, I would also use like Facebook or something like that. Like, I like how with Facebook, when you put a status up, all of your friends online can see it. and like they can comment on it, and you can even like set it up so that if you put that post up on Facebook, that it'll actually send those comments to your phone, so you can even see what people are saying even if you're not actually at your computer.
I think in my life I've only received one sexting message. I was in 8th grade. It was very awkward.
Yeah. I feel like that's a little more uncommon, and that's kind of like a personal thing too. Like, it depends on the person. Like I don't feel like sexting is really an issue that affects all texters.
Yeah, I'm not very familiar with it, but I know people that have been affected by it, and it's sort of a way to get attention to someone.
Right. Now, Facebook and Twitter are somehow connected too. I mean, I'm not a Twitter user myself, but Amber, you're a Twitter user, right?
I have a Twitter account, but I strictly follow news feeds or entertainment, like bands or something, to understand like when information is coming out. Or I follow BBC, which is really kind of cool. You can connect Twitter and other social networks to your phone, so you can get text messages from them. And
right.
Sometimes I'll get news feeds about, you know, like a hotel bombing in Afghanistan.
Okay. So all three of us, Tanya, I, and you, we all understand, you know, what Facebook and Twitter is. I'm not sure how Twitter works, but you want to explain to the listeners how Twitter works?
Yeah, so you have an account, and it's sort of a platform to where celebrities and, quote, normal people can interact with one another. And you follow people instead of being friends with someone. And you can follow someone, but they don't have to follow you. So it's a little bit more free in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of a downfall because people can just post random updates. Like, it doesn't even matter, like, what they had for breakfast that morning.
Right, and right. Totally irrelevant.
Yeah, so. And it's not, like, it's not very important to me. Like.
Exactly. And how is that different from Facebook? Because, I mean, I personally have a Facebook myself, and I put up statuses, but generally, you know, not meaningless things. I would maybe post up a video of, like, something political or some other thing, you know, that I found interesting and maybe wanted to share with my friends. So how is that different from Twitter?
It's not very different. With Twitter, you can only post a status up to 140 characters long. And you can post pictures as well, but you have to post a small link that'll, and you click on the link and it'll open it up in another window. But it's definitely different in with Facebook. With Facebook, you can you have a wall, and then that you can see pictures that people post all on the same thing. And then with Twitter, it's just these little lines that are 140 characters long, and it's just all text.
So can you also post comments about people's tweets?
Yeah, if I was to tweet something, someone could retweet it and then share it with their friends, and then they can also comment on it by just tweeting at them.
Okay, I see.
Twitter just seems so stalkery.
Yeah, it's really, I'm not extremely familiar with it, but it's, I feel like I know a little bit more about it than you.
Right. Either. For me, it seems a little redundant to the actual function of Facebook itself. I mean, anything you can do on Twitter, you can also do on Facebook, so it seems like it's kind of like, why have both when you can just have one? It's just like getting a little too involved with your computer for me.
It's more of a closed off version of Facebook, really.
I feel like Twitter's right. More personal. Like, you want to get to know that person a little bit better.
Right.
Yeah.
And for me, email, you know, as a form of communication is so much different than Facebook and even Twitter too. You know, because email is, it's a lot more like texting, but it's like even less invasive, you know. Like, Facebook is more like to share ideas and to stay connected with friends, whereas email is more like serves the same function as texting, but is probably a little more formal. Like, texting is pretty personal because it requires that you have a phone number rather than an email address, which is it's given out a little easier than a phone number. And what's interesting about it is because it doesn't ring your phone, right? So when you get a text message, it's still sort of invasive because you get a buzz or you get a ring. So it's there. And a lot of people even have two-minute reminders. So if you don't read the text, then it keeps ringing every 2 minutes or every 15 minutes or however long you set your timer. And that can be invasive, but not everybody does set that timer. But you still have that initial notification nonetheless. And, you know, it's like with email, you don't get a ring. You can check it whenever you want. You can get on your computer, log on to your email, and it's really not invasive at all. You know, as opposed to even like a phone call, you know, where a phone call is extremely invasive, obviously, with the ring, 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 you know, it keeps going over and over again.
I think email is more for like businessy type of
more formal business.
And like Facebook, it's more like, oh, you're my friend, I want to communicate with you. Yeah.
It's funny how Facebook works. I look at it as sort of putting everybody in the same room, because with Facebook, you're not actually seeing people face to face, and it may, for some reason, does something in the brain, I'm not sure what, but it makes it easier to talk to people that you wouldn't normally talk to face to face. Like, say that you have person A who has friend B and friend C. Friend B and friend C would generally not ever talk to each other, but because they're both friends with friend A, they see that he posted, that friend A posted a picture, and they can both comment on it. Therefore, friend B and friend C start talking to each other and start having a conversation online. And the interesting thing is that when friend B and friend C ever see each other in person, if they ever do, things are gonna carry out socially just as if they would have, as if they had never met before. And it's really interesting because even though they may have shared maybe a good short conversation or something, then things would carry out like completely different as if they would have met in real life.
Well, in that way, Facebook is good, a good social facilitator. I mean, if you're more socially forward, you can go out and say, oh, yeah, I met you on Facebook. Or
like, let's go to lunch sometime since I met you on Facebook.
Right.
And socially interact a little bit more.
Do you guys feel like it makes people, or it makes it easier for people to be more outgoing?
I think so, because, like, you have time to, like, think of your response and, like, think of something clever to say that would be, like, outgoing, per se.
Right. Whereas within real life, you know, maybe you're not clever on your feet, you can't think of something to say. Then it kind of makes like a more awkward situation.
Like an awkward pause. And
right. There's no such thing as an awkward pause when you're using
Internet.
Any form of text. Yeah. Right. That makes sense. Do you guys feel like Facebook helps people stay connected? People like who live far away, maybe?
I feel like it does, especially with the older generation is starting to get into Facebook more, too. Mm-hmm. Both my parents have a Facebook account, and they both connected with friends that they haven't seen in like 15 or 20 years.
Right.
So, and that's a really good way to connect with people you haven't seen in a long time.
Right. And, you know, with me personally, I'm heading off to college here in August for my freshman year, and I've actually been emailing and Facebooking my future roommate, and last night we had our second Skype conversation. If you guys don't know what Skype is, it's video chat, which is basically you can hear each other talk to each other, and you can also see each other through web cameras, and use this software called Skype, and you can communicate with this, and generally it's called video chat. And I found it really interesting that that this even really exists. I mean, it really changes the way that you communicate with people over long distance. I mean, just the fact that you can see their face while you're talking to them, even though you're not actually there, makes it a lot easier to communicate. Because, I mean, like, I don't even know what percentage of communication is just facial expression. I mean, you know, like, if someone says something sarcastic, you know, it's a lot harder to tell through text or even sometimes through a phone call if you can't see their face and you can't see the expression they're making. And it really makes conversation go a lot more fluid. It's it was really a fascinating thing. And I mean, me and my future roommate here, we talked for, you know, a good long time. And, you know, I know of other people who use Skype to talk to foreign exchange students, don't you, Amber?
Yeah, I have a friend that was a German exchange student, and I talk to her every 2 weeks, maybe.
Right.
But it makes it a lot easier, and it's free, so I don't have to pay anything to call over a phone.
So it's really attractive then, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot, and it's easier to get a hold of as well.
For you, what makes it better than, you know, making a phone call?
The money. It just, you have to pay. With some people, there's like 60 cents a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is just have a computer and download the software for Skype.
And over Skype, you can see them. Like, you can see how they're, like, changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, going into their house, as Eric said earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, because, like, when you go on Skype with someone, it's like inviting them into your house, you know, and, like, you know, you almost have to, like, kind of get ready, you know, like, to go on Skype, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't go on Skype with someone you don't know well without, you know, dressing the same way that you would go out in public, per se.
Well, because you kind of are going out in public, like, someone else is going to see you.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, pretty much going into their home and, you know, revealing, like, how they live, you know. It's really a fascinating form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about a lot of aspects of Facebook. What are some of the positive things that Facebook does? You said, Amber, earlier, it's a facilitator for social.
It's a good way to socially network, yeah. It also depends on the person, too. If they're, you know, more extroverted, then they're obviously going to go out and be more socially outgoing.
And right.
Introverts do that as well, but they're probably more likely to go on the internet and just rather chat someone or post on their wall or something,
right,
rather than actually just, like, going face-to-face. And
one of the negative facts of Facebook that I see is, like, it's a huge waste of time. I feel like I waste so much time on Facebook when I could be doing so much more productive stuff with my life.
I agree. It's a horrible way to procrastinate on doing homework as well. Sometimes I'll be writing a paper, and I'm doing the paper on the computer as well. And then I'll have the internet open looking at resources, and it just happens. You go on Facebook, and then you can spend an hour on there. And
hours and hours on
Facebook. You just think
to
yourself, like, where did the time go?
And the thing is, too, with that is if you're spending a whole lot of time on Facebook, you're seeing, you're basically getting the updates of people's lives, whether they're relevant about what they or whatever would be important, or something completely irrelevant, like what they had for breakfast. You get your updated on, you know, basically everyone on your friends list's lives. And what's weird about that is, you know, say you haven't seen someone that you know for a while, but you're Facebook friends, so you know what they've been doing. So then when you see them after, like, a few months, see them in person after a few months anyways, and you go to say hi to them, you know, it's like, it's a lot different because there's not as much to talk about. You know, you're already caught up, even though you haven't seen them in a while, because of Facebook.
Yeah, there's not much to say after that. And what I like to do sometimes is just update them over the internet over small things. Like, if they personally ask me, like, what have I been up to, I'll say something like, I cleaned the house or something, and not, like, the bigger picture. But when I actually go and see them in person, if I plan to, then I'll just, like, you know.
What do you guys think about, do you guys think that there's any dangers about, like, when you post something on your status about how that news goes to everybody on your friends list?
I think it's, like, a little sketchy because you could get bullied through certain comments that you post on Facebook.
Right, right.
Like, I feel like over Facebook or over any computer media, you can bully people so much easier.
Right.
Because you have time to think about something really mean to say.
Right, right, right.
And also you're not seeing them face-to-face, so it's more easy to make fun of someone.
Right. On another tangent of what Facebook does as a negative effect, and this goes for really texting and email, too, but email generally when it started. I'm not certain. I didn't use email when it first started, but it seems like it was more used as on a personal level. And really, that was the first time, other than writing a letter, where text was used as a form of communication. Generally, personal communication, other than writing a letter, was verbal, you know, on the phone or face-to-face. And because text now is used so much, as in, you know, like digital text, not as in writing, is used so much, it's a lot easier to you know, use abbreviations and have loss of skills in grammar and spelling, because you don't need to impress your friends with your grammar skills or your spelling skills. You want to impress, you know, coworkers or your boss on your skills, you know, because that's where you really need them. So now that text is used as a form of personal communication, people are starting to lose their skills in writing, penmanship, spelling, grammar, and all that sort of thing. And when you look at a lot of the youth, say, in like even middle school, and it's starting to become obvious in high school too, those skills are really just lacking in a lot of students.
I don't know, maybe I'm not the average teenager, but I don't like to use like LOL or like the @ for
right,
the A.
Right, right,
yeah. Like when people text me that, I won't reply because...
Yeah, there's a certain point where the lack of grammar becomes annoying and it's too much to handle, but there is a lot of abbreviations and a lot of like ways people like misspell things, but the way they do it is they misspell it to make it shorter, but it's still like the same word. Say the abbreviation BTW means by the way, or like the abbreviation IDK, which means I don't know. Things that are commonly said by teenagers when you're sending text messages, you know.
Even some of the words that they misspell, they purposely misspell it, but if they spell it the correct way, it can still take up the same amount of space.
It's right. Just the same amount of letters.
Right. So there's no point in even misspelling it.
Right.
But I feel like they think that that's how it's actually spelled.
Right. Yeah, and that's just all pretty much a part of you know, teenagers and texting. So we're going to open the phone lines now for about 10 minutes. We're in the Willett studio. Our number is 707-456-9991. Please let us know how you think high-tech communication is changing our society and world. What do you see as the benefits and costs of this technical evolution? Do you text and do you use Facebook? How about your children? At the turn of the 20th century, telephones were becoming common household items. Do you see a parallel to the digital revolution? How is new technology serving us, and how is it enslaving us? Are their children becoming robots? Are these technical advances leading to better interaction among people, more understanding, and a boost to communication? Our studio phone number again is 707-456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call now and be part of this discussion about high-tech communication. We'd really like to hear from you. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to hear from you folks something about the blurring of the distinction between the public and the private on things like Facebook, and how people are talked about whether or not they want to be on, and how, you know, hurtfulness and lies get around like wildfire, and you simply can't answer them. You're either not on Facebook, or you're not listed as a friend, etc., etc. And most of the writings that I hear about, because I'm not on Facebook, sounds to me like journal writing. And maybe I'm blurring the distinction between a journal and a diary, but somewhere in there comes a sense of privacy. And Zuckerberg scares the everything out of me, just because he has no sense of somebody's privacy.
Right.
And I will take my answer on the air. It's a great discussion and something that I think we older folks need to learn from. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Right. Actually, that's a really good point. Wow. There is, Facebook really does blur the distinction between private and the public. The one thing that does distinguish it is the fact that there is the option to private message. But the thing is, though, too, is, you know, if say, Zuckerberg or whoever at Facebook really wanted to see what you were, you know, messaging each other, he could look and see that. You know, I mean, sure, it's private to us, but, you know, there is someone in the world who can see what you're saying, you know, and that's a matter of, you know, like, small private issues that probably would have no meaning to anyone who didn't know you personally. But, I mean, Facebook really is like a public journal of yourself, you know, like, this is my thought today. Here's what I'm thinking now, here's what I'm doing now, or what, you know, whatever it is that you want to post. Here's a picture of me with whoever doing this, you know.
Yeah, I thought the journal was a really good definition.
Right, right.
Or it's like a personal, like, update, like your friends want to say, like, a personal memory of you, and they think, like, they post it on Facebook, and then now everyone can see it.
Right. By the way, we are still accepting callers. The number is 456-9991.
The good thing about Facebook, you don't have to be friends with anybody. You have to accept them as a friend. And you can go into the settings and change to make sure that no one can see, like, what you're doing or your pictures.
Yeah.
Like, block people.
Right, there are privacy settings, so you can block your pictures so people can't see them. I mean, you can even block your age if you wanted to, if you are really that set on it. Yeah, I mean, Facebook, it really makes it nice to be able to broadcast to all your friends and all the people that you know, because it is so widely used by people. The thing is just you have to have a certain etiquette when you go on Facebook. And there really is a certain Facebook etiquette, you know. There's just certain things that you don't say, you know. Like, the majority of Facebook users aren't going to say, you know, something like, you know, what they did or, like, what they had for breakfast. You know, like, I mean, some people will, but, you know, like, generally, they get no comments, you know. And eventually, when you start getting no comments, you know, you stop posting those things because it draws less attention. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for your great discussion.
Thank you.
I've been thinking about with the advent of computers, there was so much that wasn't really known about how they would affect the user, you know, and after 15 years or so, people started getting repetitive stress injuries, and some of them have been very severe over the last 20 years or so for a lot of people. Do you see any difficulty with texting? Because I have thought about and read a little bit about how it can develop repetitive stress injuries in the hand. Are you seeing that with any of your friends or experiencing any problems with that yourself? And I'll take my answer off there. Thanks.
Okay. If there's any sort of injury, I think it would be, like, maybe mental. I mean, like, I haven't seen anything other than carpal tunnel, and that doesn't really happen until, later ages.
I don't know anyone personally who has gotten carpal tunnel or any physical injury from it, but I know it does happen.
Right.
The only physical injury I can think of is, like, when people are texting and aren't paying attention, and, like, they hit themselves, like, on a pole.
Yeah,
texting can be so distracting, too.
Yeah.
People text when they drive, and that's legal, and I find it ridiculous because it takes up so much more of your attention than a phone call. And people get into so many accidents. I know several people, actually, that I graduated with that had gotten in several car accidents just because they were texting and weren't paying attention.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, as far as, like, physical injury, I don't think texting really does much, you know? I mean, like, because you do it from time to time, but, like, probably a text on average, but if for someone who sends, like, probably 100 texts a day, would be on and off for probably 2 minutes between each text. And you know, I mean, that gives your hand a chance, you know, get some blood back before it, you know, would start cramping or anything like that. But as far as, like, you know, mentally, I think there is a mental reliance on texting. You know, it's like, if you text every day, or if you really do anything every day, so many times a day, then, yeah, you're going to have a mental reliance on it. And, you know, like, there's, like, kind of a joke that goes around, you know, like, with some of my friends, you know, like, you stop texting for a while, and then you start to have, like, withdrawals from the phone. It's like, oh, man, I feel like I should have my phone in my hand. Where is it? You know, like, I was just talking to someone. Oh, I didn't send them the text. They're probably wondering what was happening. You start, like, going through, like, this, you know, whole stress pattern of, you know, what's happening in my head. Oh, God, I got to get my phone, you know.
Yeah, some days I would forget my phone, and I would just go to school, and I had to go 14 miles to Ukiah.
Right, I hate
And I was so far away from my phone, and it's just, oh, I need to tell someone about this. And I'm like, oh, wait, I can just tell them in person, you know, they're right here.
Yeah, because you're going to be seeing them anyways.
Yeah.
Earlier, I just kind of want to answer this, because I didn't really get a chance to say it, but we were talking about Facebook earlier. But isn't there a question of Facebook owning everything you post? I mean, doesn't it seem a little bit, you know, like, scary that everything you post they have access to?
Yeah, I try not to think about it, actually, just because it scares me. I mean, like, you have so much information up there, but it's all accessed.
Right. There was even some news review, I guess, they did on Facebook, and supposedly, even if you delete your account, all that information still remains.
Right, it's still there, and you can deactivate it, that's what it's called.
Right.
But it's always still there, and if you wanted to revive your account, all you have to do is really just put in your information.
Right.
And sign in.
Right. So, how old were you actually when you got your first cell phone?
I was 12 years old, so I was in the 7th grade, and I believe it was around Christmas time, and I thought it was the coolest thing, but I didn't actually start texting until I was in 8th grade, so I was just using it for cell phone calls, and it was mainly towards my parents, or, you know, that was when I just started getting, like, friends' cell phone numbers, because I was one of the first friends to get my own cell phone.
Do you feel like it was a good age to get a cell phone?
I feel like it was. For a little bit, I really didn't know what to do with it, just because, you know, I felt like there was a lot that I could
do
with it.
So many features,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and
when I first got mine, I felt like I had an obligation to use it almost, and every chance I got where I feel like I needed to contact somebody, you know, I'd just take out my phone and make a phone call, because, of course, I didn't have texting when I first got mine.
Right.
But what do you think about the age that, about, you know, what some kids are getting cell phones now? I mean, you know, kids are getting cell phones when they're
in elementary school.
Yeah, like fourth or third grade.
Right. I feel like that's really unnecessary. 'Cause in this day and age, they have the social networks like Facebook and Twitter, so they can, you know, contact their friends that way. And also that they're at school the entire day with their friends. And I feel like it's a way to just kind of block off that social interaction with people.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to our second topic on today's You Speak Out.
The shiny packaging and regal looks could soon disappear. Australia is banning logos on all cigarette packets from next year. Without branding, cigarette companies face a challenge, and smokers another curb in a world increasingly more hostile to the habit. The ban is the first of its kind worldwide, and tobacco giant Philip Morris is furious. It wants the Australian government to reverse its decision or pay up billions of dollars in projected losses. This is what it wants to protect. There are iconic images, names and packet designs so familiar that even if you don't smoke, you recognize the brand. But the change has come slowly. Firstly, it was just health warnings. Now, these images are common throughout the globe, but what Australia is proposing is this: that all cigarette packs will look the same, olive green, and the name of the cigarette in tiny letters at the bottom. And what you're left with is some very disturbing imagery. But why take such extreme measures? It's designed to stop young people from taking up the habit, and Australia is staying firm for now.
We're not going to be intimidated by Big Tobacco's tactics, whether they're political tactics, whether they're public affairs kind of tactics out in the community, or whether they're legal tactics. We're not taking a backward step.
Philip Morris says it's simply theft of a property they've spent 40 years developing.
You may not like tobacco companies, you may have no sympathy for us whatsoever, but I think the principle is the same. You can't just take people's property without compensation, and that's really what this is about.
Big tobacco brands are known to spend billions on legal fees, and this battle is likely to go on for years. Governments across the world will be watching closely. They'll want to see if such a measure can work in their country. They'll also want to see just how far Philip Morris is willing to go, and more crucially, how much money it's willing to spend to stop this becoming the look of cigarettes.
So, once again, I am Eric, along with
Amber,
and I am a graduate from Willits High School, and she is a student at UC Santa Barbara. Our second topic today is, why are teenagers still becoming tobacco addicts? In the past 15 years, there have been many programs created to prevent teenagers from becoming addicted to tobacco. Taxes were placed on cigarettes to fund tobacco education programs and make the products less affordable to youth. In 2009, President Obama signed into law the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, which gives the U.S. Food and Drug Administration the authority to regulate the manufacturing, marketing, and sale of tobacco products. This landmark law ended the special protection from regulation that the tobacco industry enjoyed for decades. The law restricts tobacco marketing and sales to all youth. It also bans all remaining tobacco brand sponsorships of sports and entertainment events. It bans free giveaways of any non-tobacco items with the purchase of a tobacco product or in exchange for coupons or proof of purchase. It limits advertising in publications with significant teen readership and bans outdoor advertising near schools and playgrounds. It also restricts vending machines and self-service displays to adult-only facilities.
Smoking rates among California teenagers dropped from 21% in 2000 to 15% in 2008. These latest statistics show that more than 20% of 12th graders smoke cigarettes, down from 25% in 2000. While these are significant reductions, the question remains, why do teenagers continue to become tobacco addicts when they are more informed about the dangers, when the cost of cigarettes is higher, and when teen-targeted advertising is supposed to have decreased, and the rate of smoking amount among high school girls is only slightly less than that of boys? Nationally, slightly more than 20% of the adults are smokers. Every day, the U.S. 1,000 youth under 18 become daily cigarette smokers. Among 400,000 people die in America each year from their own cigarette smoking, with another 50,000 deaths from secondhand smoke. Smoking kills more than alcohol, AIDS, car accidents, illegal drugs, murders, and suicides combined, with thousands more dying from chewing tobacco use. Of all the kids who become new smokers each year, almost a third will ultimately die from it. In addition, smokers lose an average of 13 to 14 years of life because of their smoking. Some students from Willits have been involved in peer health programs, where we go to grammar schools and teach about the health risks of using tobacco. Most of the presentations are to fifth graders, as the seventh and eighth grader students can be disrespectful. This is too bad, as most youth smokers begin in the seventh or eighth grade. Statistics show that about 9 out of 10 tobacco users start before they're 18 years old. Most adults who started smoking in their teens never expected to become addicted.
Australia's tobacco plain packaging bill 2011, a draft law that aims to make tobacco products less attractive to consumers, would prohibit all logos, along with different coloring and layout on cigarette packs. It would also require that health warnings cover a substantial portion of each package. Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard said, "We're going to deliver cigarette packages in that drab green with no logos, nothing attractive or enticing about the package. We are confident of our reforms, confident that we can deliver them, and confident that they will make a difference to the number of people who smoke. And that's why this is, and that's what this is all about." Philip Morris has organized or has announced plans for an endless, expensive lawsuit, and the World Trade Organization is questioning the legality of the logo ban. Young people watch 20% of the adult population use tobacco, so the association of smoking with adulthood is a serious factor. Peer pressure and the urge to experiment are as well. Then the powerful addictive nature of nicotine is hard to believe when you're young. We will discuss our ideas about tobacco addiction among the youth for the next 20 minutes and then open the phone lines for your questions and insights into this matter. So, Amber, are you shocked about the youth's use of tobacco?
I'm absolutely shocked because in this town, I never really knew anyone who smoked tobacco. But what was interesting, when I went off to college, you know, we all lived in the dorms. There were 30% of the freshmen live in one of the dorms where I was living. And they had a patio out where people would smoke, and there were dozens of people out there at nighttime and just smoking. And it just shocked me because there's information out there about, you know, what it does to you. And
right. So when you were young, you went to Blosser Lane, right?
Right.
And did you ever get any of, or ever, were you ever a part of these lessons about tobacco, about its dangers?
I was. I remember in the fifth grade, it was probably the peer health.
Right.
They came in, they showed us, they drew a poster of a person, and they asked what parts of the body are affected by cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you fill in the part with the teeth and the lungs, obviously, and it was, I feel like that's a really good program.
Right. You know, actually, I went to Blosser, too, but and they might have done a program for one of my classes, but I actually don't remember. Do you remember what grade it was?
They did in fifth grade.
Fifth grade, yeah.
Right.
I actually do not remember having any presentations like that. Do you think junior high would have been a better time for these presentations, or do you feel like they would still be disrespectful about that sort of thing?
I have to agree with that about the seventh and eighth graders being more disrespectful than that of fifth graders because fifth graders can be a little bit more easily persuaded and, you know, they're still more guided by their parents, so
right.
they don't really have this free thought kind of thing. And
having become more independent in the way they think.
Yeah, I feel like with the topic of tobacco, the earlier that they know the information, definitely the better.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, like we just said, you know, in middle school, people are starting to become more independent in their thoughts. Do you feel like influencing them later might actually help them, would help guide them away from tobacco use?
Influencing them later?
Well, yeah, so that they wouldn't, you know, smoke tobacco or chew tobacco or whoever else that you would use it.
Well, yeah, I feel like the initial idea should definitely be early on, and then, you know, later the idea should still be recycled throughout.
Right.
And
right. So in high school, let's see, some of the statistics here. Boys, let's see, 19.8% for boys smoke and 19.1% of girls smoke. And the high school males who use smokeless tobacco is 15%, and for girls it's 2.2%. What do you think of those statistics?
I find that interesting that it's a lot lower with the smokeless tobacco.
Right.
I think it's mostly because that 19.1% of girls don't do it for health reasons. Obviously, they do it probably to look cool, or it's a
right.
more of an aesthetic thing. And then the 2.2, obviously, they probably have been educated on the effects of tobacco.
Right.
And then they decide to take a alternative route, which
right.
isn't really any better.
Well, I like if you look at the two statistics between smoking tobacco and smokeless, smoking tobacco is 19.1% and smokeless is 2.2%. So, and this is just concerning girls.
Right.
And I feel that it's 2.2% for the smokeless tobacco for the girls is because it's all about, like you said, aesthetics. And for a girl to be chewing tobacco is definitely not as attractive as a girl smoking, you know. And,
right.
I mean, I think it might be for the same reason that boys are lower in smokeless tobacco as well. Boys for smoking tobacco is 19.8. And for smokeless, it's down to 15%.
It's definitely not as big of a drop, but...
Right.
The 15% is probably solely based on addiction, and it was probably because their parents or someone that they look up to smoked or chewed before.
Right. And that clip that we played at the beginning of this second segment of the show about Australia and the ban that they want to do on, or that they plan to go forth with as far as banning logos, I find that really interesting because, I mean, honestly, I couldn't see it working here, because the only thing that's really going to do is, you know, discourage the youth, because people who are already addicted, they know what's inside the box. They know, you know, I mean, most smokers are educated of what it can do, or in the harm that it can do to you, but the fact is that they're addicted, so that I feel like they don't really care anyways. They're going to smoke it because it's a cigarette, you know?
I agree. They know what's in it.
Exactly.
And that is what I need.
Right. And for, you know, the youth, it's like, they're not the ones buying it anyways. It's people over 18 that can legally buy it. So it's the people that are over 18, and they generally, they're just going to hand a younger person a cigarette. And, you know, on the cigarette, there's not, like, a big warning that says, do not smoke this. This can, you know, kill you, or whatever other warning that they that they would want to put on it.
Chances are they're never going to see the packaging, really.
Exactly. They're just going to see what the older individual is giving them, and they see you know, that older person. They think, ooh, he looks cool. And you know, no matter what you put on the package, nothing's going to change because the cigarette remains the same.
Right. Well, the kid is thinking age comes wisdom, so they obviously know the right way and what's right. So obviously, smoking is okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, considering that doesn't work, what would actually be a good way, you know, to stop youth from smoking? I mean, do you have any ideas, maybe?
I feel like they're doing a good job with, they have some commercials out, and the scare tactic is, I feel like, the only real way to actually get through to youth, because they see it. I mean, they see, like, don't smoke, this is bad for you, and rather than telling them the statistics, you know, they're not going to see, like, they don't care about numbers. It's like, let's show you what happens.
Exactly. And, I mean, not that I feel that the scare tactic is illegitimate, but nothing's really ever going to completely, you know, wipe it out.
It's never going to eliminate it.
Yeah, but I think the biggest factor that plays in that is how cool it looks and how many adults they see, you know, people that they look up to. Because generally children look up to people who they see as cool, and adults. And if you have both of those populations who have a significant population that smoke, then you're going to have a significant number of youth that smoke as well. And really, to eliminate it, you just have to make it, in a way, less cool. Or, you know, have adults, you know, I guess, have a problem with it, you know. Have adults who, like, you know, who tell their kids, don't do this because you're going to be miserable, I guess. Or, you know, somehow make it obvious from the, you know, quote-unquote cool people or the adults that, you know, smoking does not make you cool. Or an adult, I suppose.
Right.
And let's see, secondhand smoke is also a concern. Let's see, what are some of these statistics? Workplaces that have smoke-free policies have a 75.1% chance that kids will be exposed to secondhand smoke. And packs of cigarettes consumed by kids each year is 800 million. Wow. And that's roughly $2 billion of revenue per year for those tobacco companies. And that's just secondhand smoke, too. That's not actually kids smoking. That's just, you know, from, like, people breathing out the smoke and kids breathe it in that much. I mean, workplaces that have smoke-free policies, 75.1%.
Well, the thing is with the scare tactics, the commercials that show the negative effects, it's just showing the direct, what happens directly to that person. But I've only seen one commercial, and it was pretty subtle about secondhand smoke, and I feel like they need to advertise that a little bit more because it's just as dangerous.
Right. And there's another statistic. It's about 20% of the adult population smokes tobacco. How predictable is it that 20% of the younger generation will also smoke?
It says in 2008 that it went down to 20%, and in 2000 it was at 25%. That's only a 5% decrease in 8 years, and it recently went up again. So
do you feel like spending more money on these programs will help reduce it even more, maybe? Or do you think there might need to be a new tactic?
I feel like there needs to be a new tactic because
these
commercials have been going on for a few years now.
And obviously, if you spend, like that much money and then you spend even more, sure, you're gonna get more results. But then it becomes a benefit-cost analysis, of whether is this much money really worth, making it go that down, that far down, the statistics anyways. And, as important as it is, there is other uses for money that might be, considered more important even by myself. And really what it comes down to, I think, if you want to eliminate it even more, would be, just finding new tactics, finding new ways to get the youth away from tobacco. Okay. Well, we're going to open our phone lines now. We're in the Willett studio, and our number, again, is 707-456-9991. We would really like to hear your comments about tobacco addiction among youth. What do you think? Youth continue starting to smoke despite the widespread anti-smoking campaigns in the media and at the schools. Can you suggest another approach that might be more effective? If you are or have been addicted to tobacco, can you remember what influenced you to start? Do you wish you had never started? Is the anti-tobacco campaign a sign of creeping totalitarianism? Should tobacco companies be free of attacks from government and other groups? Do you find it ironic that the tobacco industry was crucial to the founding of the United States? What would you say to the young people who are about to start experimenting with tobacco? We have a short time for your call, so please do not delay calling. Our studio phone number, again, is 707-456-9991. Again, when you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion on why is our youth still becoming addicted to tobacco. We'd really like to hear from you. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey, first of all, Eric and Amber, I want to commend you on your excellent program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I don't want to talk about smoking, although it's great what you're doing. But Uncle Oli in Little River. I want to commend you on your show. Excellent. And you're very articulate and intelligent. And I like that you're bringing up these subjects that are so important for our youth. So I have a young son, and he's like texting all the time. And he's on Facebook, and he's on this, and my main concern is the young people. They got this phone up to there. I'm holding mine like 9 inches away from my head. But I see these kids walking around with their phone glued to their ear, and it's not healthy. But most of the import is that I feel like you have said, Eric and Amber, I feel that a lot of young people are losing they don't know how to write a letter.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't know how to spell. They got all these abbreviations and the cool things and everything, and they're losing contact with. I mean, I see kids texting someone who's 50 feet behind them.
Right.
Can't they look at each other in the eyes, face to face, and say, hey, how's it going, and shake hands and what? No, instead they text. So I don't want to take up much of your time. I know it's almost over, but I really love you guys. Thank you for doing this program.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. And, and on the tobacco thing, you asked just a couple of minutes ago, it's cool, Now, when I was younger than you guys, I had my first cigarette, and it wasn't a cool thing at all. I hid it. But it was a drug thing. It was like, whoa, I got like a huge high, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, once a week, I'd smoke a couple of puffs floating on the river.
Hmm.
It's like a total sneak away thing.
Right.
It was a drug thing. It was a real high.
It was like a deviation of society,
yeah.
Or
no. It wasn't a social thing. It was a drug. I never smoked marijuana. I never drank alcohol. And my friend and I I grew up on an Indian reservation north of here, and we float on the river, and we would. My friend, he would steal some cigarettes from his mother. And we were floating down a river in inner tubes, and we smoked a cigarette. And it was like, whoa. It was a drug thing. But there's different kinds of personality. There's different kinds of... We all are geared towards different kind of things, you know. Anyway, I didn't want to talk about tobacco. I just wanted to talk about, you know, I love what you're doing, and I totally, you guys are so smart for young people.
Thank you.
And so keep it up, and I would talk more, but I know you're almost out of time. So carry on, and I totally support you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for your call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi.
You're cutting out.
I think you have a low signal.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, you're always very intelligent the way you discuss your topics.
Thank you.
I think that to say that kids are more independent as they get to what you say, age 13 and 14, is not quite correct. They can be more brainwashed and more affected by society or, you know, the advertising. I think if kids would pay attention to their awareness of people's aura, not to get too woo-woo, they would see that usually somebody reaching for a cigarette is showing signs of anxiety and compulsiveness and insecurity.
Right.
Okay.
So that's just the core is a cover-up.
Right.
And kids really have the ability to see that and to discern, so... I wouldn't discourage you from going into the ones, even if some of them do mock, to keep that information going, just as they do with the, was it one killed every minute kind of thing on the alcohol information, where they reenact the results of traffic accidents to do with alcohol.
All right, every 15
so,
minutes.
I don't know if there's something similar with tobacco, but don't give up and don't assume that kids aren't going to listen, even if they're putting on bravado.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I think we need to honor the intelligence of young people and give them a chance at least to have as much information as possible.
Right.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. And caller, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you. You may want to turn down your radio also.
Yeah, I turned it off.
Okay.
So a couple of things that came to my mind was usually teenagers start smoking because of, you know, generational curses. Their parents smoked and their parents smoked. And if you look at the geographics of it all, a lot of the kids who smoke are either, like, from impoverished families who have collected some source of, you know, government funds like welfare. And if that's the case, then welfare needs to not only, the reform of welfare is great, but they need to reform it a little bit better, making it to where people who collect welfare can't take their little card and then go get cash for that card and then go buy their cigarettes or their alcohol, because now the government is funding their addictions, which then trickles down to their children who see it and begin to smoke, and it's this big web that is entangling everybody that's stemming from the government.
Mm-hmm.
Also, children don't just begin to smoke. It's the secondary approach to everything else. They begin smoking or drinking socially, they drink with their friends, they drink at their home.
Right.
Somebody brings out a cigarette, and then that's how they begin to smoke. So they need to not only target cigarettes, but there needs to be a broader range of what they're really trying to trigger.
And right.
As for the question about is it okay for the government to, you know, be putting all of these restrictions on tobacco companies, yes, because tobacco companies are targeting young children. They, the people in their commercials, their ads, they're all young, they're all sexy, they're all attractive, and it's grabbing the attention of children. And if that's the case, then they're abusing that, and government needs to come in, and they need to stop that.
Right. Good point. Thank you for your call. Well, we raised some interesting points. That's all for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Eric.
And Amber.
And unfortunately, Tanya had to leave. Thanks to all our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are very important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willits studio. Youth Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with Safe Schools, Healthy Students, Bronco Project, Building Resiliency Opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco Program, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314 or email at psanborn@mcoe.us. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX, they are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the first Sunday of August the 7th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in August.